Dr. Benny doesn't need much of an introduction. I think most people here, but still, that's the first of our classes. So I want to welcome everybody. And of course, it's a pleasure to always have Dr. Benny Gesundheit with us. Benny is a pediatric oncologist. They did a fellowship at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, which is where we met 20 years ago. Of course, while he was here, at the same time, he did a PhD in bioethics at the University of Toronto. He attended medical school in Switzerland, as you might hear from his accent. He learned in Yeshivat Haratzion for many years. He's working on a book now for many years, of course, his 30-part series on Tehillim. So he's working on putting Sefer Tehillim, the intertextual method, contextual interpretation, working on that. And has many books. I want to thank Benny. It was his idea. You know, I publish for each of our kids' simchas, I publish a book of Divrei Torah. So I got that idea from Dr. Benny. And can I say the joke I once said between you and your wife, the discussion? Benny and Nadine have five kids. So Benny did one book, each book of the Chumash for each of the five kids. So he had a machloket. He wanted to do all of Tanakh. His wife said, Torah is enough. So anyways, with that, Dr. Benny, I hope
that's the solution. Together we do it.
Together, well, we need a couple more families to add
and
all.
And there are other simchas besides births.
We have, please God, Sisei Shidri Mishnah. You do Chamishi Chim Shitur. We do the Sisei Shidri Mishnah. We need somebody for Shiva Yemei Shabbat, Shmoni Yemei Mila. You know, we'll work on it. Okay, Bakasha, we'll have, is of course a four-part series, mainly on the Haftorot, but of the that we'll be reading over Yontif and the Parshat Hatshuva. So, Bakasha, Dr. Benny, and like I say, apologize, I have to go teach here and chat in a couple minutes, so I'll be leaving, but you'll be in good hands, and Bakasha.
Thank you very much, Rabbi J. Somebody recording? Is it recorded?
Rabbi J. Yes, it is being recorded. You can see the red button. If you see that goes off, let somebody know. Host can always put on the recording button. So if that it should not go off.
I first want to thank the Achsamya Shel Torah, Rabbi Jay and Ilana. Since we met the first time over 23 years ago, I saw your dynamic and that you were driven to teach and how things developed it. I'm just speechless. You should have a lot of Hatzlacha Lahorbitz Torah in the beautiful way you do it. Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you.
I would like to focus on tefillah, Jewish prayer, of course, here related to the Bible. There is the website. I wish to thank Susan and Audrey for incredible help. Without their input, it would not be possible. And what I want to focus on are these haftarot. On Yonah, next week we will talk about the Parshat Teshuva, which is coming only later as a Parshat HaShavua. It happens to be close to Yamim Noraim. Yirmiyahu and Hoshea are part of Haftarot. And that is a very special opportunity to go back to the prayer book. And the prayer book takes us back to the Talmud, because in the Talmud, those texts were chosen for Haftarot. And that takes us back to the Bible. So I think we are in a unique situation that we can actually go back to very, very authentic original sources of Jewish tradition from the Bible, Talmud, and the prayer book and learn important messages. Ideally, the way I would like to do it is to focus very much on the text and on the text in the context, intertext, historical messages to learn. It's an academic learning with new insights to think it over. But since we are preparing the prayers and the haftarot, not just learning the Tanakh, of course, that's wonderful to do. The focus is to learn what can we learn from all these haftarot together, taking them all together? What can we learn as take-home messages, as religious messages, philosophical messages? I would like to do that for every shiur on its own. And I would like afterwards also to compare and summarize to some extent. Different aspects of tshuva are highlighted. And I studied these topics for many years. On each of these topics, there is a publication online. And every time I teach it, I learn it, I prepare a lecture, there is a new insight. And I hope to share some insights with you today. There's, of course, much more to say. I wish to dedicate that to the memory of my late father, Zichrono Livracha, who gave us the opportunity for Jewish education. He was a survivor of Auschwitz, where he had for 3 years tefillin, and those who are capable to read, to listen to the English, to the Hebrew video, which I did some 20 years ago. Here is the link to the website, Yehe Zichro Baruch. I want to explain in the shiur today five words of the Talmud. B'yom Kippur, b'mincha, maftirim b'yona. Yom Kippur, for the prayer in the afternoon, we say as a haftarah, we say the book of Yonah. Why? It's a wonderful story. So there are two I found, and one I would like to suggest. For every Tanit, for every fast day, not only Yom Kippur, every fast day, as you can see here in the Mishnah, the elderly of the community goes out and he gives a talk, hitorot, thinking about tshuva. What does it say about the people of Nineveh? Vayar Elohim et sakam ve'et ta'anitam. So Yonah is a template for tshuva. Very interesting that the Mishnah quotes Yonah, the third chapter, and says right away, but there is also a parallel pasuk in Yoel, another prophet of the 12 little prophets. And we will talk about that later. Kiru levavchem ve'al bigdechem. You should rend your hearts and not your garments only. That is the process of tshuva. So why is it needed to add the second pasuk? It looks not necessary. Let's talk about it later. So one reason is the concept of tshuva. Another concept is Avudraham, a scholar of literature, of a commentator of the Siddur, Rabbi David Avudraham, and he says the reason that we read it, lelamed livnei adam she'en adam yachol livroach mipnei Hashem im avar averot. There is no way to escape from God if he sinned. And that's the reason, that what we learn from Yonah. So I want to ask a simple question. If the reason is the tshuva of Nineveh, read chapter 3. If the reason is that nobody can escape, I don't know what the sin was of Yonah. I have no clue. Did he do something wrong? He didn't like this mission to Nineveh for reasons we'll talk about it later, but he was not the person who is defined as a person who sinned. That's not his background. That's not his personality. And if that would be the case, chapter 1 and 2 talk about the story. He wanted to go instead to Nineveh, to Tarshish, and the big fish came and swallowed him. That is good for chapter 1 and 2. Why do we read chapter 1 and 2 and 3 and 4? I think these two explanations are good, but something is missing, and I try to suggest something at the end of the lecture. And here we have two approaches to learn the book. And in Israel, we would say we go for elections because that's what they do here on a regular basis. So we can discuss, what do you think? Should we learn just the book of Yonah, a beautiful structure to read it from the beginning to the end? And we will learn a lot. Or is there approach B, which says we should learn the context? The context can be the Bible. Take not only the four chapters in Yonah, take the entire Bible. What can we learn from the entire Bible about Yonah, about Nineveh, and about this whole story? What can we learn about it? There is a lot to elaborate from that, and major contributions. And it's not only the context of the Bible, it is also the context, the historical context. What do we know from history? So is it A or B? We'll talk about it later. I want to focus now on reading. Take a look at the book. And that's my favorite handout. I took the four chapters. You will see in a moment why I presented it this way. That looks very anemic. Just the text. You have it here in a certain editing, in a certain way to present it. But these are the four chapters. Perek Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet. We could translate it. I didn't bother to do that because we will not read it in depth. I think the beauty is, if you have time afterwards to read Sefer Yonah in depth and rethink the things that I presented, I think that would be the biggest benefit from the shiur, to read it over and over carefully, and you will learn it. That's the basis of the book. And now what I want to do is, I will search what are the Leitworte, what are the leading expressions. And we have many, many interesting words. Sometimes it says about God Hashem, and sometimes it says Elohim. Very interesting topic. That was the food for biblical criticism. And there is so much to learn in Sefer Yonah, which is explained in a very, very logic way. Just think about it and you will see it. I will explain it a little bit. But what we can see here, more than that we have a super logic structure. Chapter 1 and 2, that has to be switched. Yeah, chapter 1 and 2, if it's English from left to right, of course. Here I have chapter 1 and 2. Yonah should go to Nineveh. He runs away to Tarshish, chapter 1. Mission 1, and it doesn't work. He prays from the fish. Chapter 3. He gets another mission to go to Nineveh, and he goes there, chapter 3. And afterwards, he leaves in chapter 3 Nineveh, and he sits outside. Vayit Palel. We have Vayit Palel here in chapter 2, and in chapter 4, 2. There is a very strong analogy. And we have here, lots of very, very interesting analogies. Which I will not present here now all in a row. I think everybody would fall asleep. But that is very interesting. The storyteller is aware that what happens here in his first mission to Nineveh, something happened. People made tshuva, the sailors. And here, the people in Yonah made tshuva. Lahashiv vayashuvu. They say the same words. They pray the same way. And we have analogies that at the end, when the sailors throw Yonah to the sea, it says at the very end, Vayizbechu zevach l'Hashem, vayidru nedarim. And they committed a sacrifice to the Lord, and they made vows. Exactly the same, says Yonah, from the middle of the fish. So we have like a camera, which is still with the sailors, and we have a camera within the fish, and it ends with the same words. And that's a very, very meaningful structure. And the same is true later in the book. I will not present them then. What I want to show is that each chapter has its own world. And they are all very, very well connected. That is what happens, chapter 1 and 2. And chapter 2 and 4 is his prayers. It's his internal world. And that is constructed in a very meaningful way. At the beginning, when he got the order from Hashem, go to Nineveh, and he runs away, we have just no clue why. And the storyteller leaves us with a big question mark. We have no clue why he runs away. It doesn't work to run away, and it's very interesting to see how he tries and he cannot run away, but we have no clue what bothers Yonah. At the very, very end, the storyteller shares with us what bothers Yonah. He doesn't fully explain it, but there is quite a lot of interesting explanation at the end. The tension is to the very end. What I want to do now is to say a few comments for each chapter. And as I told you, those who understand the Hebrew, the paper is online. It's a long paper in Hebrew, and might be the best is just to read it and think it over about this structure. And I want to start for each chapter with very little comments, which I chose those who are meaningful for the message of the story, the way I would like to present it. Why did he run away? We will know only at the end. We suffer with Yonah. We are bothered by something. We don't know yet what. But that there is a tension, which takes us to the end of the book. And there is a conflict between Yonah and Hashem. Yonah quits. He runs away. I will not work here. He is not willing to fulfill his shlichut, his mission. Kum lech el Ninve, ha'ir ha'gdola, ukra alea et ha'kriya hazot. This message is translated, get up and go to Ninve. But when it comes to the, when he is on the sea and there is a storm, it says later, he wants to run away from Hashem. Vayered ba'lavoi ma'em tarshisha milifnei Hashem. Kum ukra. He gets up and he is not calling upon Nineveh a word. He runs away from Nineveh, just the opposite direction to Tarshish. Livroch milifnei Hashem. Hashem? You think he is not here? The next sentence says, Vahashem hetil. And you have the word Hashem hetil in four different versions in this first chapter. And every time Hashem did something with hetil, and Yonah told, throw me in the sea, throw me in the water. So it's the same word, very, very meaningful. He thought he can run away. Hashem blocked him. And now happens something amazing. He goes to sleep. Everybody is working very hard on the deck of the boat. And he, Ve'yonah yarad el yarketei asfina, vayishkav vayaradim. Then he is going for a really good siesta. He doesn't care at all. And what is the captain telling him? He went to him and cried out, how can you be sleeping so soundly? Kum kara el Elohecha. Kum kara means get up and call your God. But this translation misses a very important point of the text and of the message. Hashem told you, kum ukra, when you go to Nineveh. And the captain has no clue what happens on the boat. No clue. But the guy sleeps. He doesn't work. He doesn't help. He is out. You should get up and call. If he tells him, get up and call, I fully understand why the captain says it. Because you can pray. Everybody has a religious feeling. It is not Hashem that you are calling to. It is Elohim. Vayizaku ish el Elokav. Everybody approached his God. And you have also your God, Elokecha. And might be the God will help us. So it's a religious belief system, not Hashem. Very beautiful, the distinction between Hashem and Elohim. But if the captain tells him, kum kra, he had no intention, he has no understanding that Yonah runs away from his mission, which starts with kum ukra al Nineveh. But he uses the same word. Look at the beauty here. The beauty is that Yonah wants to run away from the order of Hashem, kum lech el Nineveh ha'ir ha'gdola ukra aleha. And the first person he is talking to, or we are aware that he is talking to, is the captain on the sea. Malacha nirdam. Kum kra el Elohecha. So the captain is talking the two words of Hashem without any intention. And the storyteller builds that in. There is a word from Hashem, which Yonah hears from the mouth of the captain. But he had no intention. But Yonah understood. There is a double message. If he hears kum kra, he knows exactly that that is his obligation. And we have here in this book a beautiful chiasm. That is what we say, kum kra. We have a beautiful chiasm, which is A, B, C, D. In the center, we have the axis, Vayomer alehem ivri anochi. Vayomer, just a moment, ivri anochi. And he said, I'm a Hebrew man, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made both sea and land. Ve'et Hashem Elokei Hashamayim. Now he combines for them my God, Hashem, and your belief system of Elohim. I combine it. I put it together. And from now on, these non-Jewish people use the same word of Hashem for their religious experience in the following psukim. So that is highlighted in the middle. I'm a Ivri, and my identity card is I'm Jewish, Ivri, like Abraham. And I have a clear agenda as an Ivri. I believe in God who created the God who created the sea and the land. Now, Vayeru HaAnashim, they learned something amazing. And please pay attention, Pasuk 5, 10, and 16. At the beginning, it says, Vayeru HaMalachim. The sailors, they were afraid. Why? Professionally, as sailors, that doesn't look good, this storm. That looks dangerous. But afterwards, they were not sailors anymore. After Yonah's declaration, that was a humane statement. Anashim, enoshi, is humane. It was not anymore a professional fear of the sailors. It was something very human that they feared Yirah Gdola. They didn't know what's going on. It was frightening. But at the end, when they throw him to the water, and they realized what Yonah said about Hashem and his shlichut, they were growing in their religious education. Et Hashem. They learned to recognize Hashem in the middle of the storm. And look here, a beautiful observation, amazing observation. I don't feel guilty that I have to show every time when I compare one pasuk to the other that there is a reason to explain it. I think it's obvious. But if somebody is not familiar with, here we have a masterful example for it. When Yonah told him why that happened, and he explains it to him, they ask him, "What should we do?" 11, and he tells them in 12, "Throw me to the sea, because I know it's because of me." What is their response? They do not throw him to the water. They try lehashiv el hayabasha. They want to make tshuva, lahashiv. Of course, it's a professional term. They wanted to bring the boat back to the harbor. But they were not successful of the expression lahashiv. And afterwards, they pray. They made all efforts. Look, their beautiful prayer. Va'al titen aleinu dam naki. And do not make us guilty for killing innocent blood. Are you aware that they are quoting the Parshat HaShavua? Last week we read in the Parsha, if you find a dead body on the field, the elders of the close town should get out and say, Kapel Amcha Yisrael, Asher Padita Hashem V'al Titen Dam Naki Bekerev Amcha Yisrael. These elders from these, the representatives from the city, should get out and pray. A dead body was found. We don't know who killed him. And they pray. Do not let there be innocent blood. And these sailors are Yirei Shamayim, and they know they are familiar with the Parshat HaShavua. And the storyteller quotes, puts in their mouth the Parshat HaShavua. Yonah learns from them that you can be a very good person, strongly connected to the values of the Torah, and you are a goy. But that's what the storyteller tells us. That's a beautiful message. At the end of this chapter, they bring sacrifices and they make vows. The Ibn Ezra, the great commentator, has a fascinating explanation. What was their commitment? They brought a sacrifice. And there was a commitment to do something. Neder. What? To give tzedakah? It doesn't say it. So he wants to say something. I'm not sure that I fully understand or agree, but it is a very, very interesting explanation. They decided, oh, there is a mission, there is a message for Nineveh, and the man who we just throw to the sea, he will not get there anymore. They committed to go there themselves and to tell the people of Nineveh, make tshuva. That's a very interesting explanation. It is very interesting because I think chapter 1 and 3, they talk together. It's the same tshuva they did on the sea and the people of Nineveh did in the town in Nineveh. Is it really that they came to Nineveh and said it? It doesn't say it. I don't think that is critical for the understanding, but there is the same trend. The same token, they made tshuva. The people of Nineveh made tshuva. Whether, as according to Ibn Ezra, they went after this terrible experience or amazing experience on the sea to Nineveh and completed the message of the mission of Yonah or not is an interesting question. I'm happy to hear what you think at the end, but that's a very interesting insight. That was the Neder. Now we come to chapter 2. Yonah is swollen by a big, big fish. Fascinating story. He is swallowed by this huge fish. And after 3 days, he needs some time. Not the best climb, not the best place for meditation. It's a little bit fishy there. Shlosha yamin u'shlosha leilot. And he starts praying El Hashem Elokav. He reconnects to God. He is not escaping. He is not running away. And the tefillah is structured in a beautiful way. It is comparable to a lot of mizmorim in Tehillim. And I will not analyze it. Of course, I would be interested, but time doesn't allow. I want to highlight from his tefillah a few aspects. In Pasuk 3, there is an introduction. I called to Hashem and he answered me. I was in the middle of hell or of the sea and he listened to my voice. And at the end, these two aspects, tzara, and from his stress and his hatzalah, he was saved. That's the structure of the following prayer. Furthermore, the word koli, out of distress, is repeated at the end of the mizmor of the prayer. I will come with a voice of thanks, and I will bring a sacrifice. And I will give a neder, a vow. And I will do it. I commit to do it. What exactly? Ibn Ezra, to go to Nineveh, he commits to do something. Oh, for Yonah, it is true. His neder is, he's going to fulfill what he's supposed to do. So the people on the sea, did they do the same? There is an analogy. So is it part of the book? The scholar says, no, there's nothing typical in this prayer for Yonah. I don't fully agree. Kol mishbarecha vegalecha, all the waves are above me. I think that was pretty much his experience. It's not specific. He doesn't say, al chet shechatanu, I run away. But might be that is the message. He keeps praying a standard tefillah to Hashem. And I want to come back to your holy place, el heichal kochecha, el heichal kochecha. And that's the message of the tefillah. We should talk afterwards that, as we said here, I emphasize that enough, that there is an analogy between Beis Bechu, the Neder, in chapter 1 and 2, which is very, very meaningful. Both the people on the sea and Yonah walk away at the bottom line with the same conclusion. Sacrifice Hashem and fulfill what you have to do. Everybody in his own way. And Hashem told the fish, please bring him back to the land. We might ask a question, of course, it's a good story for children. These great pictures on the sea and this big, big fish and Yonah in the middle and he's swallowed and he's 3 days there and he prays is very funny. We should see later that a person who understands what Nineveh was has a much, much better understanding. There's a certain, I'm not sure if I should say sense of humor, but a clear message from Hashem, Nineveh, you run away. The big fish is telling you all the message you need to hear. And afterwards he goes to Nineveh. Vayehi dvar Hashem el Yonah shenit le'emor. Kum lech el Nineveh, ha'ir ha'gdola, ukra aleha kri'a gdola. And he should make this message. And he goes there, and he gets up. Vayakom Yonah, 3. Vayakom the king, verse 6. And everybody, vayikra'u tzom, they declared a fast day. verse 5. And everybody prayed. Ve'itkasu sakim ha'adam v'ha'beima ve'yikra'u el Elohim b'chuzka. And they made tshuva. So his mission of kum kra is fulfilled. They follow him. The king stands up and all the people stand up. Kum kra, there is, it's reflected. Interesting, if it is true what Ibn Ezra says, that the sailors were there, so of course they were sensitized. They heard the story these days in between, and they heard all the story, what happened. So, wow, there was a man, Yonah, on the sea escaping, and what a miracle, and something bad will happen to Yonah. It puts a lot of tension and a lot of interesting aspects to it. But I think there is something else where we can all agree. The message of Yonah to Nineveh is very, very short. He comes to the big city. Ir v'Nineveh haita ir gdola le'Elohim, Malach Shloshet Yamin, verse 3. It's a huge city. No, it's not a huge city. It is a big city for God. Gadol le'Elohim can be understood in two ways. Big, very big, and it can be, it is big for Hashem, meaningful Hashem. And I guess both is true. And Yonah is very short and concise. Od 40 yom v'ninve nepachet. And they believe right away. Another 40 days and Nineveh will be destroyed. He doesn't waste long talks. He is not giving long speeches. He is not up to it. Yonah is not a big friend of the people in Nineveh. He doesn't really enjoy it. And the less he enjoys it and the shorter he is, the more powerful is the message. Five words and go. Tell them. He's not telling them make tshuva. He's telling them something. Terrible will come to you. And it's their own motivation. They translate this message of the destruction. Oh, we have to make tshuva. It's exactly what he didn't want. Happened because he was so short, concise, without any emotions. And whatever happens afterwards, and Yonah gets out. And look, the text uses very impressive texts of animals they made tshuva. But since I want to show the intertextuality, we have here quite an amazing example of outstanding intertextuality. What happened to them, what they did, is exactly a déjà vu of Har Sinai. Har Sinai, it says, the animals should not be there. Al yiru el mulha, and the praise of Hashem. That's exactly al yiru. The king says the animals should not drink. We have a fast day for the animals. Quite bizarre. The word al yiru appears twice in the Bible, Yonah and Har Sinai. And the fact that Hashem, after the sin chet ha'egel of the golden calf. It says, "Vayinachem Hashem al hara asher diber la'asot la'amo." It's exactly the same what it says here. We can say that the intertextuality, it's not the lack of creative phrasing of the Bible. That's not the way I read the Bible. It is an amazing connection. What the people of Nineveh did is a little Har Sinai. They had a lot of sins. We had a lot of sins at Har Sinai as well. We have a chance to fix it. They have a chance to fix it. The intertextuality adds a new dimension and a new understanding to both stories if you read them together. So far to chapter 3. And now we come to chapter 4. And it continues the intertextuality to Har Sinai. These are the Shlosh Esre Midot, which Yonah quotes. Vayera al Yonah ra'a gdola, vayichar lo. ויתפלל אל השם ויאמר אנא אדוני הלא זה דברי עד היום עד היותי על אדמתי על כן קידמתי לברוח תרשישה. Now he talks. Why? Yonah, what's wrong? כי ידעתי כי אתה אל רחום, אל חנון ורחום, ערך אפיים ורב חסד. I know you forgive. And he takes out from Shmot Lamed Dalet, he takes out the word of Chesed, Ve'emet. You do a lot of mercy. You forgive the people of Nineveh. But Hashem, Emet, not your forte. He takes that out. The Abrabanel says, what is the name of Yonah? Yonah ben Amitai. He is looking for Emet. There is no Emet what you are doing, Hashem. Mercy, very, very emotional. Very nice. There is no truth. So his shtika, his deletion of the word Emet, is a very strong message. And therefore, he says, Kachna et nafshi mimeni ki tov moti michayai. And the story with the plant and with the worm. And I cannot elaborate that this beautiful story, but I want to point out something amazing. At the very end of the story, he prays, and Yonah says 39 words. And he wants to die. And Hashem says, Vayom Hashem, Hahetev Charalav, 3 words. And he says, Tov Moti Mechayai, my death is better than my life. 3 words. And after the story with the plant, Hahetev Charalachala Kikayom, 5 words. And he says, Vayomer Hetev Charali Ad Mavet. He is not willing to live anymore. Suicide he wants, to die he wants. Not willing to do that. And Hashem talks to him. He's like talking a very nice father with a lot of patience to his little child. And he explains him, listen, you didn't care about the plant. You didn't plant it. And it came and it went. Avad is the same word that we heard from the people on the sailors and the Nineveh. I should not have mercy with Nineveh, the huge city where there are more than 12, you tell me 120 people, the biggest city of the old world, 39 words. The book ends with a beautiful dialogue between Yonah and Hashem. Yonah is not happy, not at all, but at least they started the communication. 39, 3, 3, 5, 5, 39. There is an interaction. We don't really understand Yonah. We don't really at that stage understand why is that such an important message to go to Nineveh. But at the end, they talk. There is a lot to discuss about it. So far, the analysis, which we could take much, much longer, the beauty of the book. And we have to ask the question, why did he run away? And here's the Hebrew translation. What's wrong, Yonah? Why did he run away? The message is Hashem has mercy. Fine, to Nineveh, a nice city, a big city. So the question is, why is Yonah so unhappy with that? Is that a strange concept of Rachamav al Kol Masav? Yonah, you have such a problem with that? That Hashem has Rachmonis with another city, 120,000 people? Is that a reason to run away, to jump in the sea, to escape and to ask for death? So that is a good question. It's a message, but I think it's an open question. And there's another explanation. Yonah was concerned to be a false prophet. I understand, but listen, if your prophecy was significant, that they made tshuva, what happened, Yonah? Is that a reason to jump in the lake, to jump in the sea? To escape? To ask for death? Or to learn what the Avudraham says? Is he a sinner? I think there is much, much more into it to understand Yonah. I think that from the book, we will not understand it. We need to open our eyes to section B. Open the entire Bible and open history. And that is not only a fascinating example for Sefer Yonah. I think it is much more than that. It's a way how we can learn today the Bible. We can search. We can learn fascinating research on Yonah. We can travel wherever we want with Google. I do not recommend Rabbi Jay to organize a trip to Nineveh these days, but we can go there and learn as much as we want. I want to elaborate briefly. Who was Yonah ben Amittai from another place in the Bible, Nineveh? where is he mentioned in the 12 minor prophets, some historical background, and the entire book has a new message, has a new light, and a very powerful understanding. I think a very important message. Yonah is mentioned one more time in the Bible with the king Yerovam ben Yoash, who was a bad king. And he wanted, Yonah, here is the translation, sorry. And Yonah wanted to expand the borders of Am Yisrael politically and strategically against the neighbors. And that was the message of Yonah, Ben Amitai Hanavi. So to strengthen the border of Israel in a time where the king is a disaster, who did not fulfill the Torah and brought in Avodah Zarah, adultery, Yonah has to go to Nineveh, the enemies of Am Yisrael. Yonah is the city of Assyria. And he should tell them you make tshuva and your own nation is not making tshuva. That doesn't work. And he is trying to strengthen the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And I have to go to Nineveh, the city of Assyria. And oh, they can make tshuva and they will be strong. And at the end, they will kill Am Yisrael. That's not compatible with life for Yonah. He runs away. He is torn. I worked for Am Yisrael and for the state of Israel and for the security of Israel. Against the enemies, I'm not going to make tshuva, to call for tshuva if my own people don't do that. I can't live with that. I prefer to die. That's the message. Sefer Melachim explains the whole story. We know that Nineveh in the entire Bible, not entire Bible, in many places, is mentioned as a huge city of the old world, antique world. Sancheriv Melech Ashur. He came and attacked Chizkiyahu, and he was not successful to kill them. Would he have been successful? There would have been a Churban much earlier. And when Malchut Ashur was killed by a plague, Sancheriv went back to Ashur, to his city. Vayeshev Beninveh. That's the place of the enemy. That is Berlin of the Second World War. Yonah should go there to call them for tshuva. That's not compatible for Yonah. Interesting that Nahum and Zephaniah, and that is much more to talk about than we can do tonight, they are two Nevuot prophecies. The entire book of Nahum talks about Nineveh, a terrible punishment. Three chapters all about Nineveh. Worthwhile to read quickly just to get an idea. And Hashem has no mercy and he is angry. For his enemies. He is Erech Apayim, but not for those. So Hashem goes and punishes Nineveh. Hashem, what happens? Yonah should go and bring them back. He can't live with that. And you are yourself angry against Nineveh? I think these contradictions give the whole explanation. We see here, and I have to run fast here, because otherwise he can't finish in 15 minutes. We see here that the Treasar, the 12 small books, they have very, very strong connections. In Sefer Yoel, we have the same phrase that Yonah said to the people in Nineveh, Mi Yodea Yashuv, is exactly what Yoel told the Jewish people, Yoel in Yerushalayim. And he quotes the Pasuk V'kir'u Levavchem. That is the Mishnah in Tanit, which I quoted at the very beginning. How smart were Chazal. If they tell them the story of Nineveh on a fast day, it is basically not about Nineveh, it's about us, as Yoel taught us. But Yoel and Yonah, in the 12 books, they talk the same language for different messages. And that's an idea to be elaborated in much more detail, but I can't do that. But now let's go for a little trip to Nineveh, and we will understand everything. That's the city wall. And the river goes through the city, and it's like a knee and covers it from below here. And they were very strong here, with a strong wall here. And of course, the river is very, very important strategically and very important commercially. The city made a living from the fish market, the fish industry. And the symbol of the city was a home in a fish. The city of a fisherman, his house is inside the fish. If we look at this symbol of Nineveh of the 7th century before, you find it online, we understand the sense of humor or the sense of, I don't know what how to call it, that Hashem sent a big fish for 3 days, Yonah. The fish is your house. You can do what you want. You can die there, or you can pray. And Yonah got the message. He is now has a house of a fish. It's Nineveh where he is. That is the great, amazing message. That's really an outstanding insight. And look here, there is a neighborhood called Nebi Yunus, the prophet Yonah, and there is a lot to be learned. Of course, Nineveh was here on the Tigris, a famous place. Ashur was here, and afterwards Babylon conquered that from them some 40 years later. 40 years later. 40 years later, Nineveh was destroyed. Not 40 days. Oh, Yonah, you were concerned your prophecy will not be translated in 40 days? Don't worry. It was translated in 40 years. So it is a double meaning. And here we have the, we have here Gat Hefer. He expanded it. Eretz Yisrael. So we have here some geography. Now we have fascinating messages. And I want to keep that short. What we found in archaeology, you find it in Wikipedia, you found it in archaeology websites. And I would like to take you to a few pictures, but make the message an exceedingly great city. It's the biggest city of the non-Jewish world in these days. Yes, it's Berlin. These were wild kings. Sancheriv was a wild king. No mercy with other nations. So why is Hashem sending him there? Look at these amazing gates. Unbelievable places. Yirmiyahu uses exactly the same words of Yonah. They appear 7 times in the Bible. 6 times in the Bible. Sorry, 5 times. Once in Yirmiyahu, in Yonah, v'yashuvu ish midarko hara'ah, and afterwards 5 times in Yirmiyahu. Very meaningful, because Yirmiyahu wanted to use the template of Nineveh. They made tshuva. Oh, it was a lousy tshuva. It was a short tshuva. It was not a long-standing tshuva, but they made a change. And that's what Yirmiyahu is telling the Jewish people. Make a change. And of course, that brings us in a fascinating historical context that he wants to expand Malchut Israel, Yonah ben Amittai, Sefer Melachim. Nineveh is the last partner for him. The last partner. And Hashem sends him there to tell him a message, a very difficult message. I want first to explain why Yonah couldn't do it. Yonah couldn't do it because it's not compatible with his raison d'être. He can't do that. He can't watch how his land is not making tshuva. And his land, he is trying to secure the borders, and the enemy should be supported. He just runs away as far as he can. He needs to go for the prophecy to the east. He goes to the west, and he wants to see the death, the destruction of Nineveh. That happened about 40 years later. If you check the history, we don't know exactly. And that's the artist's impression of the palaces of Nineveh. And I want to explain it now. Oppa, that's not what I wanted to do. But now everything makes a lot of sense in my humble opinion. Now we go to Nineveh, and I will show this movie and continue to talk. You will see here a reconstruction. Imagine we could teach Tanakh with virtual reality. We see Yonah in the middle of Nineveh, that would be the next step. A huge city. with terrible kings, the biggest enemies. In 40 years, Babel will come and destroy them. They are not much better, Babel, because they will destroy Am Yisrael, Malchut Yehuda. And Yonah can't get there. It's not compatible with his life to fulfill Shlichut, that they should make tshuva. The only way he can phrase his encouragement for tshuva is, Ot 40 yom veninva nehefachet. The city will be destroyed. He is not calling them for tshuva. He's telling them destruction. 40 years later, that will happen. We know from the Meraglim that 40 days there were in Israel, the spies, for that, that was punished with 40 years. And there were huge buildings and a lot of military forces and terrible, terrible mistreatment of slaves, of enemies, enemies there. It was the biggest city in the old world. Yonah cannot get there. He is not capable to go to Berlin and tell them, be good boys, Hashem loves you, and everything will be fine. It's not with his life. Tov moti michayai. He prefers to die. So that is the message. Now we have to understand. So I think that is a good explanation of Yonah. And that is Rembrandt's picture of Yonah. He sits outside and he suffers. Will they make tshuva chas v'shalom? Will they come back and my nation will suffer from these wild, wild people? Of course I understand Yonah. Now we have to understand Hashem. But let me tell you, if Yonah didn't understand Hashem and he ran away, Hashem doesn't need me to explain him. So I want to suggest something with a lot of modesty. But I think a very interesting message comes out if we look at the Bible as an entity. Hashem has no mercy with Nineveh. 40 years later, they will be killed because they did not behave anymore according to the tshuva. 40 years later, it was destroyed by Babylon. And they were not much better. But for the time being, Hashem wants to implement love, support, and help because they are innocent. Yonah, it's not upon you to judge them and to make a cheshbon and to make a judgment about them. Our obligation is the love of human life. That's the last word of Hashem in Sefer Yonah. What will happen at the end? I will punish them. We know that from Nahum and Zephaniah. They will be punished. And look how they will be punished. But Hashem wants to give everybody a chance. Will it last? No. Was Yonah right? Yes. Was Hashem wrong that it didn't last forever? He was wrong. But he was right that they made tshuva. And this short-living tshuva as an opportunity, they could have changed their life. That is the main message, in my opinion, of Sefer Yonah. All the other explanations which we had here, I take it to the translations. In my opinion, it doesn't explain why we need all the three chapters. We could have one chapter of Nineveh and one chapter here. That is the message from the entire book. A beautiful, amazing, powerful, rich message. It is hard for us to have mercy with those who are our enemies. Yes, we have to do it if they behave according to tshuva, not if they are wild animals. But if they behave properly, it's our obligation. And that is the message. He objects to the Assyrian kingdom. That is the main message. Yes, there is a historical context. So we come back to the question. Why do we read that on Yom Kippur? As I said, if it is only about the tshuva in Nineveh, chapter 3 is enough. Not to run away from Hashem, chapter 1 and 2 is enough. It doesn't explain the entire book. But if we look at the entire book, we see that the tshuva of the sailors, the tshuva of Yonah, and Yonah's insight that I have to do my job, I don't have to do the justice for Hashem. He knows to make his justice. I have to help everybody in need. For the time being, if they make tshuva, they are not guilty. Hashem has mercy with them. And that is the main message. And if you look at the psukim in Micha, which we read at the end, just the three psukim before talk about it, that all nations will recognize Hashem. That's exactly the reason why Chazal added these three psukim to the text. So that's what I wanted to explain you on Sefer Yonah. I think there are new insights which can be learned from Sefer Yonah. It is a very deep message, the book, extremely meaningful, and should leave us for Yom Kippur that tshuva is the message for everybody in every situation. We do not have to make the judgment of Hashem, whether it is long-standing, whether it is efficient, whether in 40 years it will work. We have to find the good in every human being. And if they do not behave accordingly, it's not our decision. This way, I think the conflict between Hashem and Yonah is very meaningful. I had at the beginning the slide of A and B, and we can discuss that further. Is the discussion, is the message to read the Bible only in the text, or is it also the broader context? I mean this slide here. And I want to comment the last note on that. I think if we look at the book of Yonah, we focus on the book of Yonah. Not a bad idea what the city Nineveh is and who Yonah is, but we can focus on the book. And we have the book in front of us. We look at the book as a literal unit to look at the book. But if we really want to have a deeper understanding, from here comes the insight why Yonah ran away and why Hashem wanted to be there. That's exactly the main message. And should we learn this way or the other way around? I think the answer is very clear. If we read on Sefer Yonah on Yom Kippur, the message is above history. It's not related to Nineveh. It's not related to Berlin. It's not related to many enemies where we hope that Kol Rishei Aretz, Lehafnot Elecha Kol Rishei Aretz. It's true for every generation. Yonah was just a very tragic case. If we really want to have a good understanding, we cannot run away from the context of Sefer Yonah in the Bible and in the entire and the history. So this double level, I think, is very beautiful that Sefer Yonah doesn't want us to tell us, oh, it's Ashur, it's Sancherif, it's Bavel. No, it's not history. It's a message which is true for every generation. Forget about Ashur. Don't care about Babylon. They're not around anymore. The model, the conflict, is true in every generation. However, if we want to understand why he was so angry and ran away, we will understand only from history. Thank you for your attention. If there are any questions, I'm happy to take.
Thank you, Benny. There was a comment in the chat that if you don't fulfill God's mission will find you even at the bottom of the sea. That's from Steve Zajcik. Thank you. So it's true.
So that's the message of Avudraham. I think that to understand that Yonah was a sinner and he just ran away, he didn't like that, is not doing justice to Yonah. Everybody at work has a day which is fascinating and the highlight, and there are many routine days which, it wasn't that fulfilling and it was boring, it was annoying. So you know what? Come home, have a daf yomi, and enjoy something, and the next day will be better. That's not the reason to run away. The reason to run away is I do not go to help the enemy. The Avudraham is not doing justice to Yonah because Yonah was not a sinner. He had a very, very, very fine intention. I can fully understand it. So it is much more than the Avudraham. Mi ani to say an alternative to this wonderful commentator on the Siddur. But I think if we learn very carefully, Sefer Yonah, the message is another one. I apologize for my arrogance.
We love you, Dr. Benny.
Thank you, despite. Any other easy questions?
Toda rabba. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Toda rabba, shana tova.
Shana tova. Audrey, are there other questions?
I didn't see any other questions, but I just want to say I think that that each of us can take possibly the story of Yonah to ourselves, how we do tshuva, and how we shouldn't judge how other people do tshuva. That also is related to how Yonah was looking at their, he didn't want them to do tshuva, but maybe he was judging their tshuva that it shouldn't be. Not that it shouldn't be, but their tshuva wouldn't be good for anybody, so therefore they shouldn't do it. But that's not for us to, I think that's what you're saying.
Yes, so I think I'm happy you pointed out that clearly, Audrey, as usual, that as a concept of tshuva is everybody has a chance, everybody has a right. I understand why Yonah didn't like this idea. I fully understand. And Hashem gave him quite a challenge. I'm happy not to have this tshuva, this shlichut of a nevuah. I would be torn. But we understand that the points, everybody has the right and the chance of tshuva. Every human being. Yes, chapter 3 says even the animals prayed. Of course, they are making fun. The tshuva was not the true tshuva. If you and your animals do the same, well, so we know what the tshuva is. It's on one hand like Har Sinai, but that's not the true tshuva. Let's see 40 years later how they misbehaved against their enemies. But they have a chance to start. And that is the universal concept. Can you imagine Yonah, who was in Eretz Yisrael, and his king was a terrible king, and he has to go outside to bring other people back and to support a kingdom which is the enemy of Am Yisrael? That's the universal message of tshuva of everybody. Interesting enough, I want to close with an interesting comment. There is a church next to Nineveh or in Nineveh, and they fast on a regular basis. I'm not sure if it's still active today. That's very sweet that they fast I don't know how often they fast. And I thought, nice, the kingdom, whatever the kingdom was, not the best kingdom, not too much to write home about the kingdom of Ashur. I wouldn't be very proud of such a kingdom, but they fast. But we fast every Rosh Hashanah and we say Sefer Yonah. We fast for the world. We fast for the concept of tshuva of everybody. Don't run to the church in Nineveh. Just have a ketiva v'chatima tova. And we should enhance tshuva of everybody. Next week in Yad Vashem, we should analyze other aspects of tshuva. Thank you very much for your participation.
Sorry.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Very, very amazing. Thank you very much.
Phil has a question.
Please.
Phil, are you still here?
Yes, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
Hey, well, thank you very much, Benny, for a really enjoyable show. I really appreciate it. Greetings from Germany, by the way. Greetings from Germany.
Oh, wonderful.
Hi.
Was what?
Yeah, I'm not from the south, but just a technical question about... This is Phil from Nazareth.
Okay.
I don't even recognize my face, but we last time we met personally was in Nazareth. So anyway, to get to the question, technical question. You asked us to get back to you. You made a suggestion about the neder and the vows being sworn, both by the sailors on the boat and also about Jonah in the fish. I just would like to suggest an alternative interpretation and ask your thoughts on it. My understanding from the Psalms is that normally when the psalmist is in trouble, he asks God to help him and then promises, he makes a vow in his distress. And the vow is, when you save me, I will thank you. And the way in which thanks is given is through a sacrifice, a poda, which is a sacrifice of thanksgiving. And I would have thought that would be the basic meaning here, first starting with chapter 2, when he says, Zbacha lecha asher nadarti, Zbacha lecha, I will sacrifice to you, asher nadarti asher lema, that which I have sworn, I will fulfill. What he's saying is, you've just saved me, therefore, in response, I'm going to give you a sacrifice of praise, a sacrifice of thanksgiving. So the oath refers to his fulfillment of his vow to give thanks for having been saved. That would fit with what I understand from the Psalms, who also make promises to worship and thank God when they're saved. That then would also make sense of what the sailors are saying on the boat. They offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. What are they vowing? They're vowing, if you save us, we will thank you. If you save us, we'll thank you. And so the content of the vow is thanksgiving for the salvation that will come. In the case of Jonah, he's going to give that, going to fulfill his vow of thanksgiving because he's just received salvation. Does that make sense as an alternative interpretation? Does that across as
makes
more?
Makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much. I didn't recognize you, Phil.
Yeah.
You were on the small screens, but allowed to tell the wonderful group about this. It touches my heart. Dr. Phil Santra is an expert in psalm analysis. And he wrote, you find him on Google on chapter 3 to, on chapter 15 to 24.
3 to 14, 15 to 24, yeah.
Yes, you did a lot of work there. And we met many times. You studied as a Christian the Bible. And here we sit together and learn about the tshuva of Anshei Nineveh and our tshuva. And we can learn from each other. Phil, I think that needs a big l'chaim. I really appreciate your participation, and that touches my heart very deeply. I think your insight is very, very, very interesting, and I will think about it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for your kind words. Yeah, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Baruch Hashem, we live in a time that we learn all together from all over the world. My apologies, I didn't recognize you right away. Any other comments? Shana Tova, and see you next week.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Toda rabba. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.